it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
How's it hanging?
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is a Thursday. It is beautiful outside. We've got injury reports for the Bills, the Jets. We've got Thursday night football tonight. Should be a very, very good day. I do want to start there, though, on the injury report. We are going to get a word in on the Jets today. Paulston Jr., better known as Boy Green, will be joining us at 11. We'll also have Sal on at 11:30. But looking at the injury reports, the good news is Trey White practiced. But it is a lengthy report. It doesn't seem to be anything as super negative, long-term, anything like that.
There are two that
But there are some names on there.
There's always two that you can cross out on that sort of thing. Anyone that participates in full.
But are listed, right?
But Benford are listed as and precautionary because they were on there last week.
Yeah, Benford and Coleman.
Benford and Coleman. Both of them with groin last week. Both of them are listed on here. Both participated in full through the normal practice, not just the walkthrough. Mm-hmm. So, all right, we can probably cross that one off, especially if they're in full today as well. There are five limited. Brandon Codrington, James Cook, Dawson Knox, Greg Rousseau, and Trey White. White getting too limited is progress. Everyone else, you picked up something in the Baltimore game. And then Taron Johnson and
Shaq Thompson.
They're the ones that have the DNP. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, what does Sal always say? Like, Thursday is the...
Thursday's usually your day, you find
that's
out.
That's the make-or-break day. Wednesday is usually the precautionary, what have you. We could get the report at, what is it, like 4 in the afternoon usually when it comes out. Bunch of full practices, but they're on there. Taron would be huge.
Right.
I think for them as well. Just he dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Not too much in terms of taking him out of games, but just knowing that he's dealing with something. And to be fair, it also felt like to be perfectly honest, Derek, I was expecting guys like Terrell Bernard or Matt Milano to be on the injury list.
Right.
I saw a lot of people on Twitter mentioning that Bernard and Milano looked maybe a step slower than they should have been, maybe looked like they were dealing with something. To see neither is a good sign, but that also then points to, well, then what happened on Sunday? You know, what was going on there? Could it literally be they're just getting up to game speed, this welcome to week one kind of deal? Sure. It also could maybe point to a not-so-great sign of, you know, is Bernard maybe, too small? He's not really what we thought he was going to be in his first year. You know, Milano, he's a year older. How's that going? What have you? Again, it's week one. There's not really any reason for massive concerns, but it is going to be stuff to keep an eye on as we go. It is exciting to see about Tre'Davious White. He hasn't practiced in weeks until yesterday. I heard Sal talking. He looks normal, fine, good, what have you. We'll see where that goes. I am curious, though. I imagine they would throw Trey White back in there, especially if he gets two full practices for Thursday and Friday. But they also had Dorian Strong at 100% of the defensive snaps. And he didn't look terrible.
I will be interested if Johnson can't go.
Mm-hmm.
If Taron Johnson can't go, there's a couple of ideas that kind of like start crossing the mind on that one. Both of them involve rookie corners. Jordan Hancock, throughout training camp, got a lot of reps and time on task at slot corner, in addition to safety. Because the saying about it was that they were trying to find out what spot really they can utilize him, and it sounded like he was a little bit of like a multi-tool.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's that. Maybe it's Dorian Strong. If Trey's healthy enough, Does Dorian Strong stay on the outside and they put Trey inside, or vice versa, if Taron Johnson can't go? It's clear they trusted Strong in the Baltimore game. You don't play 100% of the snaps if you're doing something terribly wrong.
No, that was the eye-opening thing to me, is that they're down 15 points for much of the second half, and they never take him out. He is the guy. It never becomes Ingram or anybody. And to be fair, you could argue it maybe could have been or should have been Ingram. He came up with timely interceptions. Sure, once when they asked him to against Miami, but it had happened.
It had happened before.
But they trusted Dorian to stay in there.
The other answer, obviously, Cam Lewis. Mm-hmm. He's had time on task there as well. So I'd imagine the Bills have a couple of options if Taron Johnson can't go, for example. And if it's a combination where Trey White is back, then you probably have the same number of corners available to you. It's just one of the better nickel corners is not going to be there for you. That could happen. Obviously, today is the day where, kind of like in golf, how Saturday is known as the moving day.
Mm-hmm.
This is the moving day in terms of injuries. It's where we're going to get closer to a confirmation bias on, is this guy playing, is he not? And we'll see. Like I said, you can probably cross off Benford and Coleman on this. And the Bills injury report has had a habit of doing this.
Oh, they're very...
Where they put players that have participated in full on there. And I remember, like, last year you crossed off half of the injury report.
Well, I mean, because they take it as the most literal thing ever. If you had any sort of treatment, what have you, and this is how it's supposed to be. If you get any treatment, you're supposed to be on the injury report. For this, I mean, is if you need any treatment, they're going to give you treatment. Instead of, like, you're fine, like, work through, like, you know, what have you. I think there's a lot of teams out there that are probably closer to do your stuff at home, off the side, like, you're fine, we're just working through it. Where the Bills, no.
We don't need to give you treatment if you don't need treatment.
Yeah, where it's the Bills are going to be, it seems at times, almost overly aggressive about it. And that's fine.
Wait, is that a cut on your hand?
It just looks, I mean, it always looks like, at least it has the last 2 years now, that they've got just so many guys on the injury report, and many of them ultimately end up playing. That was not necessarily true during training camp. That went from precautionary to, oh, everyone's hurt. What's going on? Where now, I mean, like you mentioned, Keon and Christian Benford are going to be playing. They're full participants already on Wednesday. And McDermott even mentioned there's a few guys, nothing too serious, but there's going to be a few guys that pop up. And you see that. It's a number of starters.
My question is going to be about James Cook. If there's an injury there.
Especially a hamstring for the position he plays.
The Jets also were very good against the run last week. Maybe we take it a little slow on that one. And does that mean that you have to unleash Josh Allen on the Jets secondary that allowed 4 touchdowns already in the air?
See, I was just thinking, is it Ray Davis game part 2 against the same team?
Oh, that's right.
Against the same team. I don't think that's going to be the case.
I mean, it'll probably be both things, but, like, that lean closer to me on that.
That was Ray Davis's day. I mean, like, most people,
that's right,
if you're a Ray Davis believer, if you're a Ray Davis believer, it's that primetime game against the Jets where he was doing everything for you. That's the game. Outside of that, Davis, I think, averaged well under 4 points per carry.
Yeah.
He really didn't do much, but there is, of course, promise with him. It's that Jets game where you're like,
that's what we drafted.
Yep, that's what we wanted. That game alone got to a lot of people over the summer of being okay if James Cook left. Is it really going to change much? No, we've got Ray Davis and Ty Johnson.
Exactly. That's where a lot of the belief comes in there. And anytime Ty Johnson playing against the Jets, you get that revenge factor sort of thrown in there, and you love to see it. I do wonder, though, with how that's going with Cook, especially because of – I don't want people starting to go, this is why you don't pay running backs. That's the other part of this. We don't need that conversation to already come up because somebody might not play in week 2.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't play, he doesn't play. That doesn't mean we need to go back on it and going, oh, this is why you don't pay running backs. Please don't do this.
Please don't.
It's 2 weeks into the season.
I mean, the Bills don't help that conversation either with those 2-point conversions. Never once going to Cook for any of them.
I didn't mind most of the play calling on them. The one that I did was we need to ban fades from 2 yards or less.
It's just every team goes to them, and they don't work.
Coleman's the
you'll get one or two that are like, oh, there it is, it works.
Coleman's the type of player where it
is maybe, yeah, the, yeah.
It's not the worst idea. And if they wanted to call something on it, they would call it. But you're not planning on the referees taking over in that instance.
No, that's right. It's absolutely
and you
right.
shouldn't. Matter of fact, the game at Atlanta and Tampa Bay last week, I remember we were talking about it. The receiver looked like he didn't really fight through the route because Penix put the ball where exactly needed to be. And the receiver looked like he was playing for a flag.
Mm.
And they didn't get it. Coleman tries to fight for the ball. It boinks off his head, too, so he even had another opportunity to try to catch it. But, yeah, I think we need to start dealing with goal line play calling in a different light because I'm not a huge fan of aesthetically of the tush push. The Bills seem to be scared of it now. Either there's PTSD or McDermott's trying to practice what he preaches, which is anti-tush push.
Anti-tush push, I know there's no real evidence to point to the health issues, but every time you hear an offensive lineman talk about it.
They go, I hate it.
They have like war flash. Jordan Mailata, the opening night, they're talking about on the broadcast about how much Jordan Mailata doesn't like it, but is like, but it works, I get it.
So I do it.
And so I do wonder if, yeah, like some teams are just going to, we know it works, but like eventually something is going to happen, right?
And
maybe evidence, that is the right way to do it, of just be like, hey, we're only going to do it kind of in necessities. We do want to get away from it. We've taken calls all summer about how it lacks creativity.
Yeah.
You want to see more creativity. So maybe that is also teams going to that point as well of, look, we've got a shelf life with this play of a few years before everyone's just going to get a bunch of big dudes. And the moment is fourth and one, get them in there. And that's all that play is going to be.
And 2 and 1 yard fades. Also should fit in this category. The creativity is not there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're asking one player to make a play, one-on-one. And it, weirdly enough, it individualizes the biggest team sport. Does it not?
You can argue that all of a sudden
it's a one-on-one.
Yeah, the moment the play is called, you're going to see quarterback either go to the right or to the left and just loft it up. And, it becomes a very – here's my thing. I am cool with it when there is a genuine mismatch, when all of a sudden I've got a 5'10 corner going up against a 6'4 receiver. Like, that genuine kind of mismatch, I'm all for it.
That's play calling to find
– yeah.
That's play calling to find the target, and it makes too much sense.
I don't know necessarily if that happened on Sunday. I didn't – I'm not looking exactly at what corner is covering Coleman or what have you. It's just – for the most part, I just can't stand that play. It doesn't work nearly enough to how much it's called across the NFL.
Right.
Across the NFL.
Across the NFL.
It's not a Bills thing.
It's not a Bills thing. It is just something of like – you want to see a little bit of difference in that sort of thing. And I do like typically Joe Brady's play calling in red zone scenarios though. Why? He doesn't exclusively rely on Allen. He'll hand it off to Cook. How does Cook get 16 touchdowns last year?
Right, they actually used him in the red zone.
They used him in the red zone a good amount, too. Everyone goes like, oh, Josh Allen's the goal line merchant. They used James Cook enough there, too. Like, you don't get to 16 touchdowns for no reason. And the last offensive touchdown from last season is Cook.
Yeah.
A little pitch out play, and he's the one that has to punch it in. So it's not like they don't want to use him in that scenario. Hopefully he's okay, because I do believe he is part of this offense in a sense, especially with Joe Brady at the helm. Brady does not like to go away from the run. It's very evident. In that Ravens game, for example, it takes him a minute. It takes him until he's required to.
Yeah, and that is one of the negatives from the game on Sunday, is that it sort of felt like until they were forced to, they really did not want to leave the run game. I mean, the first half is sort of defined by second drive of the game. You're up 7-3, three straight runs, punt.
Right.
With Josh Allen at quarterback.
And that's kind of where it is, where you don't want that to happen. You want it to be the adjustment properly, not forced by game script or forced by the scoreboard. But it is clear by the Bills handing Cook a contract and by Brady's style of play calling. He wants to run the football. And not having Cook against the Jets would be, I'd call it less than ideal for him. Of course, you don't. It's less than ideal when one of your best players is off the field. But especially with a coordinator that loves to that loves to make sure there is balance into this play calling, into this offense. Josh Allen should not have to do it by himself, though he very well proves time and again, yeah, I could do it. I've got big enough shoulders. Put it all on there.
But this is where people talk about it on the defense. You know, they win on Sunday in part because Allen goes MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And he proves to the world, again, why he won the award. But he has to do it because his defense can't really get a stop until the end of the second half.
Right.
That's also where the positive comes in. If you found a player like James Cook, for as many of us didn't want to pay him, James Cook at times over the last year and a half has been able to win games effectively by himself just through the run game. They've been able to end games without Allen really having to do much at all. A few passes here or there, maybe a few runs, but ultimately not anything crazy. Not like the first few years, the Daboll and into the Dorsey era. There is that positive. It's just, that is something I do get worried about, is that maybe they're too in love with the balance.
Yes.
It's a small thing because it's one game, but it's a small thing for me. Watching for Sunday, how many targets does Keon Coleman get? Or does it all of a sudden go from, hey, he had 11 targets, 8 catches. He was dynamite. He looked like a one.
Fantastic.
And on Sunday, not due to the Jets, anything the Jets do, but because they want to be more balanced, he has like 4 targets and 2 catches. And yeah, while that's pushing everyone eats, that also, there's also is the negative to everyone eats of, are you taking your foot off the gas? Are you not going for kill shots? The Bills, I think, play the best when they're worried a team can keep up with them. When they're deciding, we're going to put this game out there, we're going to take you out of your comfort. The Detroit game from last year.
Yes.
They are going to key in on the run, score quickly, and get you out of your comfort zone. And then they're going to keep scoring because they know you can get up there quickly. It's not that they're necessarily
playing. Even the Ravens playoff game.
Yeah.
They do enough to where we're going to sell out to stop Henry.
Mm-hmm.
It forces some turnovers. And we're going to try to keep things going here. It slows down eventually. But the idea was we need to at least use game script to give Henry the football less. And it works. Henry ends up sub 100 yards on the entire day. And while Baltimore does come back and almost tie the football game, you would have had enough time to at least kick a field goal and move on regardless.
And I think most fans acknowledge, look, make Lamar a thrower.
Yes.
If he beats us throwing the ball, credit to him. It's what they did.
They sold out on it from the lesson they took from the regular season loss.
Their problem on Sunday is I think they did try to sell on the run. They just did it poorly.
First quarter, they did a great job.
Yeah.
First quarter, Ravens had 3 points. Yeah, they were driving, but
you're doing okay. You're doing fine.
It had not happened yet. It was actually very respectable from your defense at that point. And then
the floodgates opened a little bit.
Then the wheels fell off, and we all had a great time.
But
we all had a great time.
Yeah, it is something, though, I think about with the everyone eats mantra. I'm fine with it. I have no issue with it. Kansas City won 2 Super Bowls with average receiving cores. I have no issue with it. My fear, though, is they want to be so balanced, they will go away from what's working at times. I've given Brady credit to that. Of, hey, when the run game was working, Dallas stuck to it, fine. But on Sunday, the run game really wasn't working. And until they had to, they kind of didn't want to go away from it. They wouldn't pass the ball down the field. Then they found out, hey, this is really working. Why? We shouldn't have waited so long. The Jets' defense has lost a little bit of luster over the last few years in terms of the talent. Quinnen Williams, Sauce Gardner are still very good, but they seem to be the only guys that everyone is unanimous on.
I like Michael Carter as a nickel corner.
Michael Carter. But it's those two, maybe three, that are like, you know, unanimous. They're very good. They should be able to attack the Jets' defense. They should be able to.
Yes.
And I'd like to see them continue on from what was working against Baltimore, where Keon Coleman is finding space in zone defense, and he's able to – he looks like an incredibly intelligent player out there. You know, Palmer really came into his own in the second half. And, of course, you still have Shakir and Kincaid. I'd like to see the passing game still keep going, keep the pedal to the floor, even though you're going into another game. And really, it's also, in a way, the fear of the defense. I think if they want to keep playing those games – we've mentioned it. The Jets are a diet version of Baltimore. They are probably going to want to run the ball as much as humanly possible. So I'd like to, as soon as humanly possible, get the Jets out of that feeling. Force Justin Fields to have to throw the ball 35, 40 times in a game to keep up. I think that's what they should want to do. I know they want to limit how many plays they run. They want to limit time of possession for the I know that. I think you can end these games at times with Allen at quarterback early, like you were able to a lot last year too, because the receiving core looks to be better than it was ever last year. I got better feelings on Sunday from that receiving core, much better feelings than I ever did last year. Even though Matt Collins was fun and Amari Cooper had a few nice catches, but that felt like Keon has grown into this. Palmer looks very good. He gave up on one play, but Palmer looked very good. Shakir looked very good. Kincaid looked actually like he's a real part of the offense.
Kincaid looked good, I think. I think really it's Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
He looked the part of a wide receiver one. And for the everybody eats mantra, to have somebody stand out
is good.
That is a very good thing to have. And I think the everybody eats is an interesting mantra in and of itself, more or less in the ways of, say Sauce is following him. Does he command enough respect from that one game that Gardner's following him the whole night? Then do you go ahead and have more of Josh Palmer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have more of, even more of Khalil Shakir, both of whom put up good numbers on their own right? Is there more of Elijah Moore integrated into the offense? Matter of fact, one of the curious questions was, Curtis Samuel, healthy scratch.
I think for me that came down to just he's not going to do anything on special teams.
I think it was also time on task.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have enough time in the preseason or training camp. He was in and out with injuries, illnesses even, keeping him out of the last preseason game. Right. Maybe you want to go ahead and give him a little bit of extra time, couple extra practices, kind of like with Jordan Hancock being scratched.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have expected that. It's probably you picked up an injury late in preseason and training camp that, you know, we're going to sit you down for this one. We'll see what happens. But I'm very interested to see if there is a follow-up from Coleman in particular. And if not him, then whom?
Yeah, if all of a sudden the everyone eats mantra actually does become that, where instead, you know, Mike Shope kind of made this famous last year of everyone snacks, you know, they're under 4,000 yards passing, yards for Allen, what have you. But instead, if it's this year where, no, everybody eats, one game it's Coleman with 8 and 112 and a touchdown. Next game, you know, this weekend, Palmer goes off for like 690 and two touchdowns, what have you.
Yes.
I'd be cool with that. And then I'm more than fine with that.
It's Shakir with 85 on 7 catches, and it's like, hey, let's keep things going. I know the numbers are going down when we say that about the yards, mm-hmm. but it's more of the style of each player's game. And then like Coleman gets back to it of like close to 100 yards or back over 100 yards. That's where everybody should be the true mantra, is that there is a game where everybody has a pop-off. I think that I would subscribe to it a little bit of what Mike is saying on the snackage part. Because
mm-hmm.
last year, that was kind of like the top stat lines were Shakir and Palmer in the game, but there were 4 of them.
Yeah.
And there's no 100-yarder, but there's 4 of you in the 40 to 60-yard range.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, no, that – but that does kind of get into it. Everybody eats. Could it be everybody eats and one person has – snagged extra stuff from the buffet line? Because that is what I think Keon was in week 1. Everybody eats. Keon snagged a little extra.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Thoughts on Bills Jets coming up on Sunday. We'll get a word in on the Jets coming up at 11. Paul Esten Jr. will join the program. We'll also touch base with Sal Capaccio at 11:30. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Hour number one continues to roll along here on a Thursday morning, almost afternoon. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, here with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Bills taking on the New York Jets this Sunday at 1 p.m. And the Jets may have lost, but boy, it feels like there's some good feelings there. I'm excited to talk to Paul Esten coming up in about a half hour to kind of get a feeling from him because it's been a long time since the Bills could genuinely have the moral victory week where we lost to a good team, but man, we look good doing it.
Yeah, no,
It's been a long time since that's been a conversation at all.
It's a long time since that's been able to be a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not allowed anymore. Like, moral victories with a great team are not really existent anymore. No. I think it does turn into, you have to lose sometimes. Nobody's perfect. And you shrug your shoulders on that. But I don't know. Maybe you can go ahead and look into it of it. The only way you could turn it into like a moral victory is nobody wins every game.
Right. This isn't college where you losing one game might define your season. It's like, no, the great teams will lose five, right? Five or four, what have you.
Super Bowl winners lose football games. Like,
right.
That's just reality. But that's something that happens. But
yeah,
you don't really take a moral victory out of it, so to mm-hmm. say. It's the only thing that you could shrug your shoulders and go, well, all right, well, now what? I don't think we're going to be able to talk about, like, with the Bills, anything of a moral victory for a very long time still.
Oh, I think the next time Bills fans will talk about moral victories is it's a rookie quarterback taking over for Josh Allen.
It's not the Josh Allen era at that point. Yeah,
the Josh Allen era is no longer. I think that's the next time. But like for the Jets on quarterback, I think that's where a lot of the moral victory fun conversations is coming.
I also think, did we
get something? Yeah. Did we steal Fields from the NFL because he was in Chicago and Pittsburgh? And actually, he's this really good, fun quarterback that our offensive coordinator kind of knows what to do with. He's still relatively young. Did we get our version of Sam Darnold?
Did we free him from effectively Chicago? Like, yeah, he comes from Pittsburgh, but Chicago, infamously now at this point, has not had a 4,000-yard passer. And based on Caleb Williams' performance in week one, they never will.
Yeah, it might continue, actually.
And we made the joke on this very show of if they don't get it with Ben Johnson as the head coach, just go to wing T formation forever. Kick it back to like before there
was. Just throw everybody off, yeah.
Yeah. Kick it back to before vertical passing concepts were a thing because that's who the Bears are at that point and they just need to embrace it forever. But Fields is part of this. And because Fields is still such a beloved player, even with this being his third stop.
Mm-hmm.
There are enough people that would want to see, hey, can you succeed? Even with, you're making it work with the Jets? That organization? That is something that people will want to try to keep a little bit of a vested interest in here. Because of the fact that if you're able to succeed with the Jets,
right.
We got redemption arcs from Sam Darnold and Geno Smith away from the Jets.
I'm
not very common that you get a redemption arc with the Jets. Because, yeah, we dog on Chicago for never having a 4,000-yard passer.
Well, did you hear Jeremy and Joe this morning?
I was just going to say it.
Yeah.
There's this Joe Namath. That's the list.
I believe it was 1967, I think it was the season. I mean, regardless, it's Joe Namath. You know,
first of all,
names.
Throwing for 4,000 yards in 1967 is wild in and of itself.
Yeah, him and United is a little different from everybody else in that era.
Yeah, it's still wild to me. And yet, it's hilarious that that's also their last one. The difference between the Jets and the Bears is one guy.
Yeah, it's not really too much.
It's not much when it comes to the evolution of the forward pass.
Mm-hmm.
And both teams do have a Super Bowl, one with the player that gave them their 4,000-yard season, And the Bears just do it old-timey because that's the only way they know how to do anything, apparently. They're just allergic to 4,000-yard passers. But it would be something very intriguing to me if Fields found his way in New York, because then I'd be truly convinced that it is a Bears problem.
Yeah, because then all of a sudden, if the Jets are somehow able to revive it, I think everyone knows I'm a big Justin Fields guy. I was when he came out of Ohio State. I tweeted it out that this is why he's always
there. Were a lot of people nervous about him being taken by New England.
Yeah, I was one of them. I was having a near nervous breakdown of, oh no, they've done it again. Of here we go. They're going to fall into
you and I what were texting a lot a that day.
Yeah,
because I was at a friend's for that one.
We watched the draft together. I was with you on that.
Yeah, never mind.
And I was just not having.
We have watched a lot of drafts together. They all kind of blend together now.
But I'm so curious to see if this continues on. And to be fair, as we've mentioned, they're going to be kind of a diet version of what Baltimore was in week one. So there's a very real chance that we're leaving this game with thoughts of both the Bills' defense concerning, but also, oh no, did the Jets find a quarterback? Are they the second best team in the AFC East, even at maybe 0-2?
Oh man, how deflating would that be for Miami and New England too? Because in the offseason, there was a lot of hope for the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
Of, hey, you might have your quarterback. Maybe you've also got a softer schedule. Can you be the team that kind of steps up next now because you can take advantage of this? And then Miami, bad vibes. Bad vibes, but you are also, for years, the second best team in the division. Can you at least hold on to that for now? And the answer soundly looks like so far, no. But it would be a little deflating, I think, for Patriots fans, knowing that the roster is still far away, and the Jets would be the team of all teams that decides, hey, we're actually not booty cheeks, and we're going to be able to keep this going.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to find out on that end. It's just going to be interesting to see if the Bills really have a walk in the park here or if it might actually be a bit of a fight. 803-0550, the number to call. I want to jump on today's show. Let's do that right now. Get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. JD is first up today. JD, how are we doing?
Good, guys. Good. Love the show. I don't quite understand, what everybody eats really means anyway, because you're supposed to spread the ball around. And I know, folks wish we had Ja'Marr Chase, and I get that, but that's not the deciding factor in whether you win a Super Bowl. This club had a really great offense last year, and you can tweak things, but I noticed the Kansas City Chiefs have any number of receivers over the years, and they're hugely successful, and they don't always have a superstar guy, and I think it's about how your offensive line is playing and who your quarterback is. And I wanted to get your comments, and I want to ask you a quick question.
Yeah, JD, so on that real quick.
I think it's a not-so-subtle jab at Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, I think realistically Diggs was so much the focal point of the offense. My only issue with the Bills is where Kansas City, you're right, Kansas City won two Super Bowls after trading away Tyreek Hill. Their problem is they get timely plays from their playmakers, whether it be Kelce, Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Or their defense.
The Bills, the last two playoff losses, have had the ball on offense to win a game, and they haven't gotten those plays, whether it be Stephon Diggs in his final game as a Bill, or last year, Dalton Kincaid, the ball goes through his hands. That's where I get excited about it. Maybe Keon Coleman is, he might be kind of one of those guys, a gamer in that sense.
Well, listen, it's definitely all in the timing, and statistics don't tell you when things happen. They tell you what happened. But the second question, and I'll hang up and get your comments, is do you think it's possible that the move toward smaller, faster linebackers in general, not just the Bills, might not be the best thing? I see the Bills get gashed, and I just wonder, boy, Biscuit and Talley were such big guys, and I think about guys like that. What do you think about like the size of linebackers, and is it going in the right direction? Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call. And to say something about that immediately, I addressed that a lot yesterday. Derrick Henry's a one-of-one situation. I think that the smaller linebackers is an evolution towards the passing game, and teams are finding their counterpunch. And obviously, it's not just Derrick Henry. Last year, there was a lot of running backs that got over the 1,000-yard mark. We're getting back to a little bit more of balance.
Well, I mean, we're talking, too, like Derrick Henry being a one-of-one. It looked like for a minute there was going to be two 2,000-yard rushers last year with Saquon as well.
Yeah, and that is kind of what's going on here is there's a little bit of a balancing act going on because you do need linebackers that can play in coverage. You do need linebackers that can help protect the middle of the field in the air as well as the ground. Some teams, like Baltimore, love to take advantage of that. Some players, like Derrick Henry, are much larger as a running back compared to his compatriots in this generation. Saquon Barkley was one of the most highly touted running back prospects. In a timeline where running back is so invaluable, he's taken second overall. But you get Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, James Cook even. Guys that are getting over the 1,000-yard mark consistently. And there is a little bit more balance going on with the run game nowadays. I'm not going to say that JD's point is incorrect. There is a price to pay. But it is still a necessity to have linebackers that can play in coverage, because otherwise you get an AJ Klein, who is one of the last vestiges of the old school run-stopping linebacker, struggling to keep up with Travis Kelce, who, as of recent, has not been the same player he once was. He has timely plays, but he's not consistently that guy anymore. And you have a player like that, though, struggling to keep up. Do I think there is some value in it in getting like a rotational run-stopping linebacker? Yes, but he needs to have versatility. And if you can't deal with the pass, which the rules have dictated you need to, what good are you?
It's the ebb and flow of the NFL. I mean, that's really what it is.
Coordinators like to try to incorporate balance and counter punches.
Well, even look what the defense had to do because of the passing game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got small linebackers, but now it's going to be, we talk about it, you especially talk about it all the time, the too high shell.
Yes.
Take away the deep ball. You also having smaller wide receivers had become a thing, where for decades, you couldn't be under 6 foot, 210, 215, because you would just get destroyed over the middle of the field. I mean, a guy like
because
Xavier Worthy.
Because big thumping linebackers.
Yeah. A guy like Xavier Worthy, he's first-round pick, his 40 time. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, the 40 time wouldn't have mattered. Been like, cool. What else can you do for me?
You're short. You're probably going late.
Yeah, you're going to go late. It's the ebb and flow of the NFL. It keeps it interesting. That much is certainly true. And you try to be ahead of the curve. That's kind of the big part of it. The Bills have been somewhat ahead of it in terms of how balanced they are, whether it frustrates many of us or not. They went back to the running game as a lot of good teams were starting to do that. You also saw for a little while, and I've loved this aspect of the NFL, because of the smaller linebackers, there has, in a way, been a revolution and a renaissance for tight ends. You're seeing tight ends now being first-round picks, coming and having to be a major factor of really good teams. That was a run there for a while of the great teams had great tight ends. Kelce, Sam Laporta, George Kittle, Dallas Goedert, or Zach Ertz, depending on what Eagles team you want to talk about. The Bills do this.
Ertz did it for a long time.
Yeah. Too. The Bills do this with trying to get Kincaid. Then you also see Tyler Warren is taken very early by the Colts. Colston Loveland. Brock Bowers now, of course, as well for the Raiders. You're seeing that kind of revolution of, hey, we can take advantage of these smaller linebackers. They can cover us better, but they're not as big as us.
It's about counter punches. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
It's fun.
It is fun. It's also, the league has, by default, all defenses in the NFL run a base nickel. College defenses now are mostly base nickel. Some still have a base of like a 4-3-3-4 style. But very rarely are you getting seven players that are larger human beings than the others. A nickel corner is now a priority and a starting position. That is what it is. So it is fascinating. And I appreciate the call there too, JD, about it, because it's about the evolution of the game. And how can you find your counter punches? And the good coaches, the good coordinators, the good organizations, you try to find them. And while Dalton Kincaid has not had the massive success as the other tight ends that you listed, he was drafted for that purpose.
Yeah, he was drafted for that purpose, to be a mismatch, to be a difference maker.
And maybe in week one, we saw a little bit of that.
Also, to JD's other point on everyone eats and how important the offensive line is, could not agree more on that. I think it was Matt Ryan mentioned he'd rather have skill position players over an offensive line. I know we played the position. I super disagree.
And he won an MVP with that, though.
Yeah, but I look around the NFL. Go to the Lions game. They lose a few pieces on their offensive line, including Frank Ragnow. Do they look the same?
Hang on. Actually, now that I'm thinking about that, because like even when Ryan's there, there are still more like statuesque quarterbacks when Ryan's at his best.
Mm-hmm. So he's all about now, get the ball quick, get it out, get it out.
Speaking of the evolution of the game, it is a requirement for a quarterback to be able to, at minimum, manipulate the pocket with his feet.
In some way.
In some way. You have to be able to move. You cannot be a statue. And you mentioned Jared Goff in particular there with the Lions. Gets battered. They lose Frank Ragnow. But Goff is the least mobile quarterback left.
Him and Stafford.
But even Stafford, I see manipulate a pocket every now and then and still like dipsy doodle his way even at his age. But Stafford and Goff, oddly enough, the players that were traded for each other, are the last vestiges of the pure pocket passer.
Yeah. Interesting where it goes. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll get a word in on the Jets as Paul Esden will join the show. Sal Capaccio also at 11:30. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We've got Thursday night football tonight. Commanders at Packers.
I'm kind of excited for that.
That is a really, really good matchup for... This is the Amazon Prime debut. That's a really good matchup to get the Amazon Prime schedule underway.
Well, considering
that's a
that,
really good one.
Considering it's probably an apology letter for the slate that they got last year.
Most years.
But that's also Thursday night football. This is a good test for the theory of how good Thursday Night Football is, really. This is a great matchup between two high-end caliber teams in the NFC. And if we get 17-13, abolish Thursday Night Football.
Just get rid of it.
Yes.
Get rid of it.
I'm not kidding.
I'm looking at the slate now, and
somebody,
this is my favorite for a while.
Somebody, at the very least, suffers when it's Thursday Night Football. Somebody does. And always it's Al Michaels for the existential dread of having to call the game. He's never having fun.
No, it is a shame. Him
and it's not a great product.
I don't think he likes Kurt Herbstreit. I just don't. I don't think they're a really good match. But this game I'm excited for. You have a Washington team who, once they got everything wrapped up with Terry McLaurin, you even also saw week one, Debo Samuel.
Had a great
really
game.
Good. They've got some young and old talent. They're one of actually the older rosters in the NFL, but they've got some young talent as well that I really like, including Daniels, of course. And then Green Bay. They make the move of the offseason right at the gun. And, man, they looked so good against the Lions, albeit at home, and the Lions are trying to figure stuff out. We mentioned that their offensive line's kind of gotten gutted. They lost both their coordinators.
And
but Love
several
had like,
coaches underneath yeah, those.
But like Love had like four or five like quote unquote big time throws. I think where it's like 25 plus yards or what have you. He looked phenomenal. And you wonder what his season would have been like last year if he doesn't get hurt in Brazil. Because that really kind of defined his season of trying to get healthy, not being healthy, and then trying to play through it. And Sunday he looked great. I'm very excited for tonight's game. It really should be a very, very good game. Did I say it's in Lambeau? It's in Lambeau, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, Lambeau night too. Very, very good.
Again, this is the test. We'll see what happens there with Thursday Night Football. But I'm excited to at least see if it is a quality matchup and kills my theory a little bit here.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
803-0550, the number to call. Want to jump on the show, but coming up after a quick timeout, we'll get a word in on the Jets. Paul Esden Jr. will join the show. Stay with us. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Hour number two rolls along here on a Thursday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and very excited. We go to the Wester Hotline. We're going to get a word in on the Jets as Paul Esten Jr. joins the show, better known as Boy Green. Paul, how we doing, man? What's going on?
Derek, Zach, a great combination, baby. Salt, pepper, mac and cheese, yin and yang. Here we go, baby.
Can every guest do that for us? That was awesome.
There we go. Paul Esten Jr., as I mentioned there on the Wester Hotline, the host of the Man Child Show, Boy Green Digital, and of course, digital reporter over at Heavy. You know, Paul, I gotta say, when I reached out to you too, like usually, you know, it's Jets week, Dolphins week, you know, Patriots week would have its divisional, but like I am like really excited to jump in on the Jets. I know it's a loss, but week one, you tell me if I'm wrong, it felt like the vibes though were a little bit different.
There's no question. You know, Aaron Glenn, as soon as he came to the podium, said exactly sort of how you started the question. You know, no moral victories. We don't do that around here. That's not the vibe, but. I mean, there's just so much that went right for the New York Jets. First off, scoring 32 points in any universe, I mean, that's unbelievable. So the Jets offense being able to put that sort of mustard on the sandwich raised some eyebrows because, quite frankly, that was the biggest mystery heading into the season. Tanner Engstrand has never called plays at the NFL level before. He's done it at college. He's done it at the XFL level, but he's just never called it. So there is no tape. So there was no, you know, confidence or anything for anyone to have that all of a sudden you'd be able to manufacture that. And Justin Fields, I mean, unbelievable performance for Justin Fields. 16 to 22, 218 passing yards, three total touchdowns. Didn't turn the ball over. Of course, his rushing ability, 48 rushing yards being added to that. There was just positives from that perspective. The offense looked really good for the New York Jets. Throughout the majority of the game, the run defense was incredible. The run offense beyond Justin Fields was really good, but they just had a lot of leaky stuff in the secondary outside of Sauce Gardner, who performed very well. A lot of busted coverages, and Aaron Rodgers took advantage of that. But yes, there is a different vibe. There is some excitement. I think Aaron Glenn described it during his Monday presser as disappointed, but really encouraged by a lot of the things they saw.
Paul, when it comes to the Jets and the offensive performance that they had there, I was really impressed with Tanner Engstrand in his first game calling plays as an offensive coordinator there. There were a couple times where he was really in his bag, making some great play calls. You saw the if you saw the run chart of Breece Hall, they kind of really made sure to avoid T.J. Watt in that sense as well. In addition to being able to have such a good game, they knew to make sure not to have TJ Watt try to like wreck plays on his own because he has the game-breaking ability to do it. And the other thing, my favorite call was that Justin Fields keeper where he gets to high-step it in the end zone. I was very impressed, though, by Engstrand in his first game calling plays.
And as you should be, you know, it made a lot of sense, not only running away from TJ Watt because TJ Watt's awesome and he's the second highest paid pass rusher in football, only behind Micah Parsons now, but the rookie Armon Membu, the seventh overall draft choice out of Missouri, had the unenviable task of, yeah, go block that T.J. Watt guy in your first assignment of your NFL career. What an impossible challenge, which, by the way, Armon Membu did very well. I think schematically the Jets helped him out with all the things you said, running to the left, running to the Olu Muiwa Fashanu at left tackle, John Simpson at left guard, running away from T.J. Watt, frustrating T.J. Watt. And then in the opportunities where it was Armon Membu versus T.J. Watt, Armon Membu played as good as any rookie in football, and I'm sure that's not ESPN headline stuff, but he didn't give up any sacks, didn't give up any pressures. He performed incredibly well against T.J. Watt, which was incredible. But specifically to your point on Tanner Engstrand, it was just the right combination of stuff. We know Justin Fields, can run around. Of course he can. He's one of the most dynamic running quarterbacks in the league. So we knew that was going to be a part of the equation. But how Tanner Engstrand put Justin Fields in position where he was able to set his feet and use his God-given talent to just throw the football as a quarterback, which was a funny thing because Pittsburgh Steelers corner Brandon Echols, who's a former Jet, he said the key to victory against the Jets was forcing Justin Fields to play quarterback. And that sort of came off as this insulting thing because, right, Justin Fields is a quarterback and he wants to prove he can be that. But Aaron Glenn said back in March at the annual league meetings that they wanted Justin Fields to play quarterback. So Eccles and Aaron Glenn wanted Justin Fields to do the same thing, and Tanner Engstrom was able to get it out of him. The next key, though, is sustainability. Can we see Justin Fields do it again? I think that's what people are waiting for here against Buffalo and many games to come this season.
And Paul, I'd imagine that the Jets are looking at that Ravens tape, looking at read option concepts and how well that they were able to run the football. Zach and I have been saying this constantly now over the last couple days. We might get another variation of pretty much the same offensive scheme that the Bills saw against Baltimore, which is a duo of a quarterback that can run the football and Breece Hall being really good in his own right. He's not Derrick Henry, but he is dangerous in his own right. And I did see something from you where you pointed out something that Rich Eisen said about the Jets haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Chris Ivory in 2015.
What an unbelievable stat. That's also the last time the Jets had a winning season, which was 10-6 before, of course, you gashed our Buffalo Bills. I had Ryan Fitzpatrick throw three picks in the fourth quarter. I'm still holding no rental space in my brain at all, but thank you for bringing that up. But yeah, it is a wild stat that Chris Ivory was the last running back to run for 1,000 yards for the Jets. And the other nugget is like, I knew that, but what I didn't know is that's the longest active 1K rushing drought in the league. I was like, wow, okay, that's crazy. So, yes, the Jets are going to run the football. That's no surprise. They had a lot of success against the Steelers, who – the numbers are the numbers. They had 39 rushes for 182 yards and three touchdowns. Some of that, of course, coming from Fields, but Breece Hall last year just never looked right. He was battling something, an injury all year. And in this scheme, when everyone has doubted him more than ever before, this offseason, a lot of trade rumors and everything else around Breece Hall as he enters his contract year. Breece Hall quieted a lot of those doubters in that opener against the Steelers with 107 yards rushing, averaged 5.6 a clip. They involved him in the receiving game, 2 catches, 38 yards. I'm surprised they didn't even get more screens out there to Breece, because it seems like when they did that, that led to a lot of success. So, yeah, I'm not going to lie. The Jets are licking their chops, I'm sure, about all the leaky run defense they saw from the Bills. But in the same way, I'm sure Josh Allen's looking at his job saying, oh, wow, Aaron Rodgers threw 4 touchdown passes. That old man did that. What's a reigning MVP going to do? So I'm sure they're looking their chops at each other and some of the weaknesses shown in week one.
Paul Austin Jr. here on the Western Hotline. I do want to get to the Jets defense, Paul, but first, I was a big fan of Aaron Glenn, especially about midway through last year. He looked to me like a head coach. I'll be honest, as a Bills fan, I was very nervous when the Jets had hired him, because I'm like, oh, crap, I think he actually can do the job. You know, he really made a bit of an entrance when he first came in, you know, kind of, if you want to say, embarrassed Aaron Rodgers by making him get on a flight to ultimately tell him to, we're not going to keep you. But I've really liked what he's done so far with New York. Of course, sure, it's an 0-1 start. It might be an 0-2 start, but at least to me, I really like how the Glenn era started. What have you seen?
Yeah, he's unapologetically himself, and I think that's refreshing. There's accountability. I mean, we saw that this week. I mean, Xavier Gibson, who you guys remember well 2 years ago in the season opener, has the 65-yard punt return walk-off for the touchdown in the game against Aaron Rodgers. We fast-forward 2 years to this Steelers game over the weekend, and Xavier Gibson fumbled twice in the game, but the one that was most notable was in the second half. He gets the ball chopped from his hand. Steelers recover. They immediately score a touchdown. At that point in time, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, the Jets held a 2-point lead, and the Steelers defense hadn't stopped Justin Fields all day, so the Jets looked like they were in a great position. He fumbles. Steelers immediately score a touchdown. Ultimately, the Jets lose by 2 points, so that game was circled. Accountability. That lacked in the previous regime of Robert Saleh and company. So Aaron Glenn immediately cracking the whip, and Xavier Gibson getting cut from the team, which seems a little harsh, but you know, he said after the game on Sunday, if you're going to cost us wins, you're going to cost us, cause issues for us. So you're not going to be on the team. And that's obviously clear. So I think a lot of it is refreshing. Aaron Glenn, of course, being a former Jet, a first round draft choice back in 1994 for the team. He picked the Jets over other locations. Jet fans love that when New England requested an interview, he said, absolutely not. I have no interest in interviewing the Patriots. That revved up Jet fans, too. So, yeah, a lot of people are pretty fired up about him. Again, there were questions, though, to your point. I mean, you were, you know, a little nervous as a Bills guy, but, you know, he's a first-time head coach, and you never know how that's going to work. And he's a defensive guy, and the Jets have had nothing but defensive guys as a head coach in the 21st century outside of Adam Gase, and that was a disaster. So there were still legitimate questions about Aaron Glenn, but I would say after the first week, outside of some timeout snafus happening there in the second half, I thought Aaron Glenn represented himself very well in the opener.
When it comes to, I'm looking at an opportunity at some strength versus strength here. The Jets have probably a really good defensive line that, like, Will McDonald has a 10-sack season. Jermaine Johnson looks to be coming into his own. Quinnen Williams, one of the best defensive tackles in the game. And then one of our old friends, Harrison Phillips.
Harrison Phillips. You guys love that, don't you?
Yes, we do. Yeah, like, it really hurts the heart there. But I look at that, and then you look on the other side. The Bills have one of the best, most consistent offensive lines in the NFL. They also have a quarterback that is very difficult to take down in their own right there. What do you look at there when it comes to strength versus strength? A great defensive line against a great offensive line for this matchup.
Trench warfare, baby. You love to see it. You mentioned Will coming off that 10-sack season. And the big thing for Will is 8 of those 10 sacks that he had last year came within the first 8 weeks of the season, which means the final end of the year, he had like nothing. He wasn't able to convert in that same way. So people were like, where's the real Will McDonald here? How consistent could he be? And week one against the Steelers, he has 2 sacks. So, okay, I guess we're right back on track there from a Will McDonald perspective. I'll tell you this on Jermaine Johnson. He tore his Achilles in week 2 of last season against the Tennessee Titans. We're like, man, what kind of Jermaine Johnson are we going to see? He played 89% of the defensive snaps in week 1. So I think that surprised a lot of us from that perspective. We thought it was going to be a slower, you know, sort of build-up for Jermaine. Apparently not. So that's really encouraging for the New York Jets. You mentioned Quinnen Williams. He's the straw that stirs the drink, a leader on this team, the second longest tenured Jet outside of their long snapper, Thomas Hennessy. He's an important piece to the puzzle. And then you guys mentioned Harrison Phillips. So he has been a welcomed addition, both as a leader and exactly what the doctor ordered. The Jets struggled to stop the run last year, and they were able to get Harrison Phillips for a half-eaten bag of Doritos from the Minnesota Vikings. I still don't understand how the hell that happened, but God bless the Purple People Eaters for getting rid of good players for nothing. And the Jets welcomed him with open arms. So I think the challenge here and the intrigue is that in the Robert Saleh days, and Robert Saleh had a lot of success against the Buffalo Bills, especially at home in these home matchups against the Bills the last couple of years, is he used to run a defensive line rotation, but he really primarily only rushed the 4 and say the 4 get home and everyone else is going to play coverage against Josh Allen. This Aaron Glenn-Steve Wilkes combination is much different. They love to blitz. Josh Allen has had a lot of success against the blitz. The Jets like to run man. That could be issues with Josh Allen. If he gets past the initial phase there of rushers from a Jets perspective, he could get loose, and that could be big gashes in the run defense game for the Jets as Josh Allen goes buck wild. So I think the difference here, as we talk about this trench warfare, Bills offensive line, Jets defensive line, is Jets are going to blitz. They're going to try to overcompensate. Okay, the Bills have a good offensive line. Well, okay, the numbers are the numbers. 7 beats 5. Let's see if we could get that many and sneak a couple of nickel blitzers, safety blitzers. Steve Wilkes and Aaron Glenn are going to be a little bit in their bag in terms of trying to throw Josh Allen off his spot. So it's going to be great. Iron sharpens iron, strength versus strength. That could decide the game in terms of this disruption on MVP quarterback Josh Allen.
So, Paul, a little bit more there on that secondary, because ultimately the defensive line for the Jets looked great. 4 sacks on Rodgers, I think 7 QB hits. They did not really let the Steelers run the ball at all. The problem was, though, Rodgers goes 22 for 30 and throws 4 touchdowns. Allen's coming off of what looked like to be maybe he's going to try to do a repeat performance at MVP. You know, what is going on with the Jets secondary outside of Sauce Gardner?
You mentioned it. I'll start off with Sauce Gardner. He traveled for the first time, really exclusively in terms of what he brought to the table from that perspective, because he was mostly on DK Metcalf throughout the game. But there were opportunities where the rest of the Jets defense left much to be desired from that perspective, which caused all kinds of issues. And that was specifically Brandon Stevens. Brandon Stevens caused a lot of issues for the New York Jets. And, you know, while the coaching staff, that was one of those, and here's just a stat, I was trying to find it real quick. Sauce Gardner traveled with DK Metcalf, 30 of 34 pass coverage snaps, And in the game, he ended up giving up two catches for 18 yards, and one of them was the deflected ball, which was crazy. But Sauce Gardner did very well. He's a high-speed corner in football, and he traveled with Sauce with DK for most of the game. The one who struggled was Brandon Stevens. The Jets signed him. It was the second-largest free agent deal they gave up this offseason, only behind Justin Fields, who's a three-year deal for $36 million. And a lot of Ravens fans celebrated when Brandon Stevens went to the Jets and went, oh, thank God, that guy stinks. And when he came to the Jets, a lot of Jets people were nervous on the outside. Aaron Glenn and company said, hey, we believe in our coaching. We can get the best out of him. And Brandon Stevens was the player of training camp. He looked awesome. And then we get to week one, and he looked absolutely awful. Out of position, tackling issues, busted coverage issues, communication issues. So Brandon Stevens was one of the black marks for the Jets in that week one game. And I would also put Michael Carter II there. He's one of the highest paid nickel defenders in football. And he's been a really good player for the Jets, but last year was marred with injury, so that injury was basically a wash. And then this year in that first game, he was out of position on tackles, which led to a lot of yak opportunity for DK Metcalf and some of these guys. So the Jets got to button it up. It's both at the nickel position and also the opposite corner of Sauce Gardner. Now, Steve Wilks just spoke to the media a little bit ago before we're doing this conversation right now. And Steve Wilks says he is not going to judge Brandon Stevens on one game. They believe in the player, and they believe he's going to have a major bounce back. Well, we'll test that out immediately here in week two.
And with that test, Paul, Keon Coleman, 8 catches, 112 yards on a touchdown, probably what's looking like on most depth charts to be presumably the number one wide receiver with the Bills. I'm curious to wonder if Sauce Gardner follows him around, because the Bills here, there's this infamous everybody eats mantra. It's on Brady's shirts and hats. But now it could be the Bills have a guy that might threaten to be a wide receiver one if he keeps up the production. That would mean probably getting Sauce Gardner's attention. And then you mentioned Stevens, Carter, they have their struggles. Khalil Shakir and Josh Palmer had themselves pretty good games against Baltimore. They needed to in order to help get the win there. But do you think that Sauce Gardner might be following around Keon Coleman a little bit in this game?
It's a great question. On Monday, Aaron Glenn was asked, like, hey, is Sauce the traveling man? Is that like his responsibility now on a week-to-week basis? And AG says, we want to have some flexibility. Occasionally, he'll be the corner that he was a couple years ago, where it's left side, right side. He's just covering a side of the field, and that's it. But there will be games where he shadows. And it's, you know, if you look at the Jets' schedule, start looking ahead, right? There's games against whether it's Zay Flowers or Jamar Chase, or week five is a CeeDee Lamb matchup against the Dallas Cowboys. I think in some of those, it's very clear he's going to be shadowing the opponent's top receiver. As you mentioned, Keon Coleman had a hell of a game against the Baltimore Ravens. He got a ton of targets specifically in that fourth quarter where he was getting a lot of action with the ball getting thrown his way. I'm curious in the same way if the Jets are going to do it. The Jets have not revealed their cards, and I doubt that they do with any of their coaching media availabilities before we get to the game on Sunday. My gut right now actually is that they won't travel and that it'll be more left side, right side, which again is potentially something the Bills can take advantage of. It sounds like with what Joshua Palmer brought to the table as a new addition, and Khalil Shakir, who's getting healthier. I was out there at Bills training camp a couple of weeks, months ago, and you know, he was obviously in the boot. Now he looks back and looked very nice against the Baltimore Ravens. So my gut is saying left side, right side. I don't think he ends up traveling with Keon, but obviously, that's Aaron Glenn's decision to make, but I think throughout the season, they're going to sort of, you know, they're going to adapt chameleon style to the team they're playing. Against the Bengals, I think it's 100% a shadow opportunity. Against the Bills, where, to your point, before the season, I would have said if I had to label a wide receiver one for the Bills, not in the natural sense, it would have been Khalil Shakir, but with Keon Coleman's performance, obviously, he certainly got some eyebrows raised here on One Jets Drive.
All right, sounds good. Paul Essen Jr. here on the Wester Hotline. Paul, before we let you go, let the people know where they can find your stuff.
Of course. I mean, you guys are about to have a guest that I'm about to have on the show. So we both have great taste, apparently. Sal Capaccio, WGR 550, of course. So that interview is dropping on my YouTube channel, at BoyGreen25, where I cover the New York Jets every single day on top of my work I do for Heavy.com as the New York Jets digital reporter. So great, beautiful plug there. It's like where we sort of set this up, which is beautiful. And so, yeah, it's great. And I always love when you guys put out the, you know, it's not the bat signal, it's a Boy Green signal. So whenever that light comes on, I'm like, damn it, honey, I got to grab the cape and we got to go.
We got to go.
So I always appreciate the call, boys.
Thank you so much, man. We'll be talking again soon.
OK. Can't wait. Thanks, boys.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Paul Essen Jr. there on the Western Hotline, better known as Boy Green, host of the Man Child Show, Boy Green Digital, and, of course, a digital reporter over at Heavy. And, I mean, I'm curious now about that man stuff. I saw Chris Trapasso mention that as well, that they played in man coverage a lot. But
it makes sense.
Paul brought up two as well, two of those corners to look at. Brandon Stevens, 8 targets, 6 completions against him for 78 yards. Michael Carter, 4 targets, 3 completions, 66 yards. It really was only Sauce Gardner that was very good. 4 targets, that 1 catch for 11 yards, which I believe that's the tip ball against him. And if all of a sudden, it does become right to left, we're not sticking to one guy, we'll see. That also goes to the point of what I kind of want to see the Bills do, which is keep the air raid going. Keep what was working in that second half of that Ravens game going, and Jets defense could point to that.
Especially if the talented defensive tackles, Quinnen Williams, Harrison
Don't
Phillips,
let you run the ball.
They don't let you run the football again. Then I'd imagine for a second straight week in a row, if they struggle to get off the ground running, I would imagine that the scoreboard wouldn't dictate it this time around, but I would think that Joe Brady's probably like, well, let's do this again. It worked last time. Mm-hmm. Why not again?
Man, looking back at this real quick, the Jets, you look at this, should have won. It's a lot like Bills, right? Ravens of you look at it and go, man, how'd the Ravens lose that? It's for the Jets, how did they lose that? They have more total yards. They sacked Rodgers 4 times. They had more first downs. Rushing yards wasn't even close. Pittsburgh had 53 total rushing yards. The Jets had 182 and 3 touchdowns. The passing numbers are relatively similar outside of the touchdown numbers, but to be fair, the Jets made that up rushing the ball. It's that one turnover. Because even third down conversions, Pittsburgh's 4 of 10. Jets are 7 of 14. Time possession, almost 11 minutes in favor of the Jets.
It was that untimely.
It's the turnover.
It's the turnovers on the kick returns.
Yeah.
And when you lose the special teams battle like that, especially the Steelers had just scored to pull within 2 points, and then you fumble the kickoff, you had a 2-score lead. All of a sudden, it's gone. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Right. Exactly. I think this is going to be a fun game on Sunday. I think the Bills will win. I'm not saying that. But as I mentioned, I like Aaron Glenn. I like what they've got cooking on offense. We all know I'm a Justin Fields fan, and they can run the ball. And the Bills may not be able to run the ball again, and we'll see if the Bills, like Sunday, wait a bit too long to get away from it, or if they kind of look at it and go, this ain't the matchup for that. Let's go back to the air. We like what we had on Sunday. Let's keep that ball rolling. And it can kind of work in unison, Derek, where, you know, for years, that's where you wanted to get the Bills to run the ball so that teams all of a sudden got off of Josh, where before it was Allen in the pass game had to do it. You know, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss are not going to do it for you. Cook allowed for teams to have to key in on him.
Right.
You can kind of go back to it of, we want to get the run game going, but we're going to do it almost with the passing game.
You might need to use the pass to set up the run this time around instead of vice versa.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We got a word on the Jets there. Now we'll get on a word for the Bills today as they get back to practice. We've had our first injury report, and we'll take a look at what to expect from today. Sal Capaccio joins the show next. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR. Everyone, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you will find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. And, well, we were just at the Western Hotline. We go back to it as Sal Capaccio joins the show. We got a word on the Jets. We now get a word on the Bills. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Good, guys. Good morning to you as well.
So, we got the injury report yesterday. A lot of names. Only 2 players are out, Sal. Ultimately, it ends up just being Taron Johnson and Shaq Thompson. It also should be noted, Trey White practiced for the first time in a few weeks.
Yeah, for sure. I think that today is the key day. Obviously, we'll find out at practice now. The Bills change up the schedule on us a little bit here today. They will only hold a walkthrough, so we will not be able to watch practice. But once that happens, we will get an injury report afterwards. Because it's a walkthrough, it'll be more of an estimation a lot of times that happens. But then we'll be able to know. And I would say that today's the key day. Obviously, it usually is when a guy misses practice on Wednesday. So Taron Johnson, missed yesterday with the quad. If he doesn't practice today, then you start to get a little concerned. If he does practice today, I think everything's on track. Shaq Thompson as well with the hamstring. And then speaking of hamstrings, James Cook was on with a hamstring injury yesterday. It's limited, but you never like to see that with a running back. But again, we'll find out a little bit more a little bit this afternoon.
There were a lot of guys limited, Sal, a lot of starters as well. I think this is something McDermott mentioned in the post game, or maybe even on Monday, that maybe not necessarily a ton of concerning injuries, but there were going to be some guys that picked up some stuff along the way.
Yeah, for sure. They're going to be, you know, I'm sorry, when you picked up stuff, you meant like injured or just play? I'm sorry.
Injuries.
Injuries, yeah. The way I like to phrase it this time of the week is a lot of times it's more maintenance issues, things that you tweak that you want to be careful of. You don't want to push anything. So, look, I mean, in the case of Taron Johnson, for example, there was nothing in the game. He finished the game. There was never an injury report. And afterwards in the locker room, he was in good spirits and talking to us. So when you see quad injury on Wednesday, I'm not that concerned right now. But you never know if something happens after the game, you wake up Monday morning like, oh my God, like what did I do, right?
We've all been there.
Yeah, right? So, we'll see a little bit more today, but you're right. Maybe you pick things up you don't realize because of the adrenaline of the game and how it's going.
You also talked to Trey White yesterday after practice. I think for a lot of people, there was, even though he was listed as doubtful, we all kind of knew he hadn't practiced, you know, three straight days, hasn't been practicing for a little while, wasn't going to play. How did he sound going into this week?
He sounded confident, happy to be back, no doubt about that. Confident in how he played yesterday, practiced yesterday. He said, so far, so good. Everything felt good. He said it was always good to be back with his teammates on the field. Trey wants to be on the field, and it really hurts him not to emotionally. And obviously he had the physical injury. You know, the other thing is we saw what happened to him, you know, a couple of years ago when he had the first injury and his rehab and coming back and how much that devastated him to not be around. And, you know, I talked with him about that a little bit and how this one went down back on August 21st was the last time he practiced, I believe. And, you know, he said, thank goodness that he avoided a really serious injury. Didn't have to get carted off, nothing like that. But he did miss the first week. And obviously that's not something you want to do, but he also gave a lot of praise for Dorian Strong. He talked about Dorian Strong and how well he played. And he said that guy's been like that since he came in here, though, that he's physical. He didn't give up any big plays, busted coverages. He was very tight in his coverage. So I really like that Trey, the veteran here, who got replaced by the rookie for that game, you know, had those things to say. Now, if you want to talk about who's going to play long term, that's a discussion later on. Because you also have Max Hairston, who's still on injured reserve, who's going to come back after three more games, maybe, you know, at a minimum. And you have Tre'Davious White. So, you know, that's a discussion for later. But I think in the meantime, if Tre'Davious White is healthy, he is clearly their second starter opposite Christian Benford.
Sal, not to mention continuing on cornerback, though, it's Taron Johnson with the DNP yesterday. There are a couple options that Buffalo would have if Johnson has to be kept out of this lineup, including a fellow rookie in that one. Jordan Hancock was getting a lot of time, I do believe, within training camp of playing nickel. They have Cam Lewis. I would imagine, even if healthy, would they be able to also possibly ship Strong inside if they wanted to, if White is healthy?
I have not seen Dorian Strong play inside much. Okay.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In preseason, so I don't think that's an option. He's an outside corner. I mean, eventually, could he wind up training there? Sure, but he hasn't done that. Dorian Strong is maybe early in camp, he might have played inside a little bit, but he's been an outside corner pretty exclusively here for the last several weeks since Tre'Davious White got hurt, especially, right? That's been where he's played. Jordan Hancock has been pretty much exclusively safety, guys, over the last several weeks. So really, your backup nickel corner is Cam Lewis. Now, if you need another backup nickel, you can. Obviously, Jordan Hancock has done it a little bit. He could, so let's say Taron Johnson was out and Cam Lewis started. He'd be the starter. You could have Jordan Hancock as your backup nickel. You also have Jamarcus Ingram who could do it. Jamarcus Ingram's a backup nickel. He could play outside. He could play inside. That's one of the reasons I've said for a few weeks where, hey, if you don't have Jamarcus Ingram starting the outside, he's still available to you to be, you know, all these other things. So they love their flexibility, but it would be Cam Lewis. And then I would not anticipate Dorian Strong right now doing anything other than still playing outside corner.
Before we get away from it, I do want to remind you the Barnes Firm Injury Report is brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal, we did just talk to Paulson Jr., Boy Green. I know he's absolutely a friend of you and has jumped on when you're hosting. He mentioned a lot of how much the Jets play man coverage. And really looking back to their game on Sunday, most of the stats would point to they probably should have beaten the Steelers, but they were very susceptible to the pass outside of Sauce Gardner. And for me, at least, I know the Bills want to establish the run. I know they really do want to lean into that when they have that option. I look at this Jets team, though, and wonder, should they just start right away from where they left off against the Ravens and go right back to the air?
I mean, you would love that anytime, right? Because you have Josh Allen. I totally get it. I understand that. And I don't blame. And if the Bills do, yeah, I mean, hey, that's the formula. You have Josh Allen, just go do that. I think what's important to note is just the Bills' tenet. If you want, I guess that's the way you say it. Their pillar of how they want to run, how they want to be, the philosophy. And one of their basic pillars is to keep Josh Allen healthy. And because they can run the ball and are very good at running the ball, they want to do that to A, run the ball, control the game, control the clock, but also keep their quarterback healthy and not take any unnecessary shots. You know, if you come out there and you just start slinging it around, that's great. It's all well and good. And maybe Josh Allen can do that. You're also putting him in a position where, you know, teams are teeing off on him. And I just think people have to remember that like this is an 18-week season. It's a 17-game season and then some. And the more every game that goes by that you keep your MVP quarterback healthy and upright because you can win by not having to have him do all of that, I think that's the best of both worlds for the Bills. It doesn't have to sound great to people. I totally get it. I understand, and I'm not here to push back on people who say, you have Josh Allen, what are you doing? Just go out and throw the ball. Look what happened last week in the fourth quarter. Totally understand. But I want people to understand that the Buffalo Bills philosophy is, hey, we have Josh Allen here. He's our ticket to try and win in Lombardi. And the more we can keep him healthy while winning football games, we're going to do that. And if they can win football games by keeping him healthy and running the football and not having to do all that, they're going to do that.
Sal Capaccio joining us here on the West Her Hotline. Might I mention, Sports Professional of the Year by the Buffalo Broadcasters Association.
Yes.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Congratulations for that, by the
way. Very much congratulations.
Do we add that to the open when I come on? I'm not really sure. I don't know. Thank
maybe,
you, though. No,
we
I.
Can.
I. Hey, listen, you guys, congratulations to you as well. WGR was named Radio Station of the Year by the Buffalo Broadcasters Association. So you guys are just as much of a part of that as anybody else. And for how much you work to fill in and be a part of this show and other shows, that it's truly appreciated. So congratulations.
I'm going to throw it back in celebration on that. And before I do that, though, Dion Walker had an interesting quote looking at Ed Oliver yesterday with the fact that TJ Sanders is going to come into the game and Ed Oliver pulls him back and enters the game himself, forcing the fumble. Obviously, mass hysteria ensues from there. But it just goes to show how much of a heater Oliver was on Sunday, but it's also really insightful to hear that from Dion Walker.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you know, him and TJ Sanders are standing there. They're about to go replace Daquan and Ed Oliver, or maybe one of the other. But anyway, TJ Sanders is going to go in, and like Ed's like, no. He knew he was, you know, we've seen that before from running backs, right? We've seen that before from running backs where, no, I'm good. Come on. You don't have to take me out. I'm good, right? And hey, I mean, good for Ed Oliver. Sean McDermott talked on Monday about Ed Oliver's game and how dominant he was and how good of a game he had. You know, the thing with Ed Oliver, though, we've seen this over the years. It's the consistency that needs to be there, right? Ed Oliver's had really big games in his career, but he hasn't put that all together for a season sometimes, where sometimes you just say, hey, where was Ed Oliver in this game? And part of that reason has nothing to do with Ed Oliver's ability, of course. It's the fact that he needs, I think, a lot of times someone next to him to have teams concentrate and have double teams, because then he can do his work one-on-one. He's a penetrating guy, right? Like, Ed Oliver can really be disruptive. I think the way the Bills want to structure their defense with Joey Bosa and Daquan Jones and having Deion Walker, if he's next to him, they're going to have to command some attention. That really frees up Ed. But then Ed's got to do it himself. And he certainly did on Sundays. It's kind of funny to talk about that when they gave up what they did running the ball, that a defensive lineman has such a big game. But he did. He had 6 solo tackles. Like, That's very rare for a defensive lineman to have, by the way.
Yeah, and so you bring up that consistency issue. That's kind of always been like my one bugaboo with Oliver, and actually even to the point where I got to of like who maybe will break out for the Bills defense this year if they really do get better. It's why I ended up leaning more towards Greg Rousseau. But with that consistency issue, with the fact that he had such a big game against the Ravens, he is going to be somebody I am going to, as hard as I can, staring at him, what he's doing to see if, you know, maybe we're starting to put together a full season here. I do look at that quote from Deion Walker, and again, it could be absolutely nothing. This could be normal for a guy that gets on a heater. Or maybe this is something of Oliver really taking the bulls by the horns and wanting to be one of the main guys on this defense.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, I remember, and it stands out to me, is we were at a radio production meeting during one of the preseason games. I actually think it was the first game. It was right before the Giants, right? Where what this is what happens is in these production meetings is we meet with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott to kind of go over some notes for the game so we can be prepared on the broadcast. They do it for TV. They do it for radio. So everything in there is basically, you know, on the record, and they talk about the team and whatever that we can use. And one thing that Brandon Bean said in that meeting, he said, you know who's had a really good camp is Ed Oliver. And he said he's had maybe the best camp that he's had at least in several years, if not his whole career. He said, I'm really excited about the way Ed has looked. And I kind of filed that away because I'm like, all right, because we didn't see Ed Oliver in the preseason much, you know? So I kind of filed that away. And here we are. He shows up. His first week, he has that type of game. And you're like, boy, Brandon Bean, for saying that about Ed Oliver, going back to when training camp was, you know, winding down and they were getting into preseason, to say that, like, they knew and they saw that this is a guy that's ready. And boy, you think about it, Ed Oliver, how many years in the league now? 19, 20, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7th year in the league. You know, 7th year in the league. You know, a lot of times that can be the sweet spot for a lot of guys. It can also be at his position. Sometimes when guys start on the decline, I do not see that. To me, he's an ascending player right now, the way he played.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be very, very exciting. Sal, before we let you go here, two things. You did mention today's a walkthrough, so I don't imagine then we'll hear from any players, but could be wrong on that end.
No, we will. Yeah, we will. We'll hear from players after the walkthrough, but no watching of practice for the media today because it's walkthrough, but everything else will be the same, and we will hear from players after, so we'll have that for you.
All right, fantastic. So you can follow that as well at your Twitter, at Sal Sports. And then tonight, Thursday Night Football, it's the Amazon Prime debut for the season, and Sal, they got kind of a banger. Green Bay and Washington, I think should be an awesome game. But as Derek pointed out rightfully, it's also Thursday Night Football. This could be bad because it's, well, a short week.
Yeah, it's you never know what you're going to get on these Thursday night games, right? They could really be stinkers, but I love the talent on the field in this game. I really do. And Jordan Love looked really good last week for the Packers. And of course, now they have Micah Parsons. And boy, how can you not love what you saw from Jaden Daniels last year and then in week one? So this should be a really fun game. I think this should be a fun Thursday night matchup for everybody.
All right, Sal. Thanks for jumping on with us, and we'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks,
Sal. That was
Sal
Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. Sal will be back on tomorrow for the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, joined, of course, by Bills head coach Sean McDermott for a little bit of a word on what to expect from this weekend. So do stay tuned for that. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. We're here until 12 o'clock. Sabres Live will take over at the top of the hour. This is WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, and Derek, you're going to have some fun this weekend, aren't you?
First of all, I'm disappointed. You didn't let that drop.
No.
You didn't let the beat drop
at all. We have a quick segment here.
It's a quick segment, but it's not that quick, man. You could have waited 2 more seconds.
No.
So I'm just over here like, man, it's got no rhythm.
No.
No rhythm.
No. I've sometimes taken 20 seconds into the show because I'm like, I got to wait for the beat to drop.
Feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme, get on up, it's bobsled time.
Man, Cool Runnings, great movie. Great movie.
But yeah, no, what do you got going on this weekend, Zach?
My brother's cooking my family dinner and the Bills play Sunday.
Okay.
Other than that, not much. Football on Saturday, college football.
I feel like you should be propping that up though, because isn't your brother a chef?
He works in a culinary school, yes. He is a teacher at a culinary school.
So that
he doesn't make me enough food for me to like be like, oh yeah, he's a chef. No, I don't get to eat enough of it.
No, because it's
yes, he is.
But because it's rarity, you should be propping that up a little higher.
Well, we'll see how it goes on Saturday.
All right. Well,
I'll send pictures.
Hey, you know what's going on though this weekend? I mean, like you, I'll be working the Bills game, so obviously there's that. The Sabres prospects play this weekend.
How many games is that? It's four?
There's three of them for
three.
Them.
Three.
So there are five teams hanging around. They're actually starting tonight with New Jersey and Columbus. Kids getting started. Sabres play their first one on Friday night.
Yep, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock it'll start up.
That guy over there on the other side of the glass, he'll be part of the team.
Josh Schmidt, Brian Koziol, Paul Hamilton.
Yeah.
Be a lot of fun.
Josh will be joining those guys there. I'd imagine Brayton Wilson will also be part of it. We got a good amount of fun there. I'm a hockey junkie. I'm probably going to sneak over on one of these days, either Friday or Saturday,
mm-hmm.
to go check that out. Maybe even Monday, because like I'm not in.
Yeah, no, it's a good time to go down to. Harbor Center's beautiful.
Yeah.
Good way to spend the weekend. And that's even if the vibes are not good, that's always a good time.
Because it's
that stuff
pretty
is always
independent
a good time.
Of the team.
Yes,
that is
absolutely.
Up in the NHL. They will have a couple of players that are noteworthy, though, when it comes to who is going to be playing. Of course, no more Yuri Kulik because mm-hmm. he's graduated from prospect status. But Isaac Rizane, Noah Osland, probably your forwards to watch in this one as well. Konsta Hellenius. So those three are probably your guys that you're probably looking at and paying close attention to in this one. Rudy Mirka, their first round pick from just this past summer. Another one that you'd want to look at. And hopefully you get something from them. I just go to watch hockey happen. I don't really have much in terms of stakes. I don't need to really be tweeting anything out about the game when I go to it. It's just going to be I'm going there to A, pester Paul Hamilton.
It's good. It's good.
And B, watch some hockey.
We're like
what? Primary goal is A.
We're 2 weeks away from the preseason starting. A little yes. under now, right?
Yeah, but it's definitely because training camp happens.
Comes out of nowhere.
Training camp happens right after the prospects turn around. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Because that was when I think it was Savoy a couple of years ago. He hurts himself.
And he
had a legitimate shot to make the roster
yeah.
back then, and then obviously he gets traded. But I'm sure we'll hear more about the Sabres Prospects Challenge coming up next. Why? Sabres Live coming up here on the other side with Brian Duff and Marty Biron there. That's it for me and Zach this week, but Sal will be back in tomorrow on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.